Welcome to I'm Not Supposed to Be Here, the podcast. In this episode of I'm Not Supposed to Be Here, the podcast, we delve into Chapter 15. Lily, are you ready to continue where Eddie's story left off?
Absolutely, Sophia. Let's dissect this chapter. Eddie's emotional state seems to have reached a critical point.
Indeed. He describes himself as out of my fucking mind, lost, angry, depressed, and lonely. This is a stark contrast to the outward persona he projects on stage, where he brings joy to millions. He's deeply conflicted, isn't he?
Severely. The juxtaposition of his internal turmoil and his public success is jarring. He's aware of this dissonance, admitting he shouldn't be near a microphone. Yet, he continues to perform, seemingly fueled by a reckless abandon. This suggests a self-destructive tendency.
Exactly. He mentions the constant questioning from the press about his dog, Crappy. This seems trivial in comparison to his emotional turmoil, yet it fuels his sense of unease. It's a small detail, but it highlights his vulnerability. He then describes a dangerous dichotomy, the allure of defying societal expectations by traveling with weed, juxtaposed with the ever-present risk of severe consequences. His actions exhibit a distinct lack of fear, perhaps a desperate attempt to feel something amidst the numbness.
His bravado masks deeper issues. This isn't mere rebellion. It feels more like a cry for help, disguised as arrogance. His statement, "I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want," while shocking, showcases his desperate need for control in a life where he feels powerless. He's lost respect for authority and himself.
He reflects on his transformation into a diva, a consequence of years of people constantly catering to his needs. This, he admits, has created a dangerous environment where his expectations are always met, fostering a sense of entitlement.
The irony is palpable. The very success that's supposed to bring happiness has contributed to his alienation and self-destruction. It's a classic case of the self-fulfilling prophecy.
He then directly questions his state of mind. How do I get through to myself? This is a pivotal moment of self-awareness. He's asking for help, whether he explicitly realizes it or not. His statement, maybe it's a little of both, hints at a self-awareness that might spark a pathway towards change.
Absolutely. The anecdote about Paul McCartney's near incarceration in Japan for weed possession highlights the gravity of his actions. He's risking severe penalties, demonstrating a disregard for consequences that's both frightening and, sadly, understandable given his mental state. This shows he's aware of the risk. He's aware he's pushing boundaries, walking a tightrope between audacity and recklessness.
He arrives in Tokyo, a city that reflects his dreams and ambitions. The contrast between the vibrant energy of Tokyo and his inner turmoil further intensifies his internal conflict. Yet he acknowledges that his success is a validation of his intuition, his decision to ignore outside advice, a testament to his self-belief, at least to some extent.
The contrast is sharp, the electrifying energy of Tokyo against his emotional numbness. He's achieved a significant milestone, yet it doesn't bring him lasting satisfaction. It's almost as if success itself has become a burden. Perhaps he was hoping for a more profound sense of fulfillment.
He touches on the ephemeral nature of happiness, his feeling of constantly chasing it. The fleeting moments of connection in his travels are no match for the enduring pain of inner turmoil and grief. He even questions his own mental health.
It's a poignant statement, Sophia. His yearning for connection and validation is clear, yet those same things have created an environment where he pushes people away. He even states that he wishes to be alone.
His past experiences of judgment and ridicule have hardened him. Success, far from alleviating his pain, has amplified his sense of superiority, leading to intolerance. He readily judges and severs ties with friends based on perceived flaws.
It's a complex response to past trauma, a twisted form of self-protection. While understandable, it's also self-destructive. The change in his behavior is very dramatic, very sudden.
He mentions his growing intolerance for flaws and explains the reasons for severing ties with people who don't measure up to his standards, highlighting a rigid moral code. His high standards are explained in detail. He does not judge people based on their wealth or social status, but on character and morality. His own flaws are not ignored.
His judgment, while harsh, stems from a deep-seated desire for authenticity and loyalty. It reflects his past experiences of being judged and not fitting in, a desire for high-quality relationships.
The irony is that he's become the very thing he despised, the judgmental person who once felt judged himself. The cycle repeats. This is a key point of self-reflection and a source of great internal conflict.
Exactly. He is his own worst enemy, in a way. Success didn't solve his problems, it just amplified them, pushing him towards isolation and self-destruction.
His reaction to those who fall short of his high standards of morality is quite severe. He's not afraid of severing ties.
It reflects the intensity of his values and his intolerance for behavior he finds unacceptable. He draws clear lines between what he considers acceptable behavior and unacceptable behavior.
His growing success leads to changed relationships, even with friends who appear to want only to benefit from his success. He observes these changes keenly and notes them throughout the narrative.
The shift in his social circle highlights the superficiality of fame. True relationships endure despite changes in circumstances. He observes that he has fewer friends than before and has become a lone wolf.
He undergoes a Tibori tattoo session in Tokyo, a transformative experience intended to reconnect him to physical sensation and potentially ease his emotional pain. The tattoo itself serves as a symbol of his achievements. It is not an escape, though.
The tattooing becomes a type of therapy. The pain is a way of feeling something real, a way of breaking through his emotional numbness. The process is both agonizing and cathartic.
The experience in Tokyo is a profound moment of self-awareness. His band's name, tattooed on his arm, serves as a powerful reminder of the real achievements and the reality of the current situation.
The tattoo becomes a powerful symbol of his journey, a tangible representation of his success and its significance. He understands that his music no longer solely belongs to him, it belongs to the world. This leads to an epiphany of sorts.
The convergence of voices in his music creates a powerful, humbling experience, a testament to the universality of his music. The significance of his work lies in its ability to transcend borders and connect people through shared emotions.
This realization is significant. His success isn't just about his personal achievements, it's about the connection he's built with his audience. This changes his perspective, softening his attitude, and promoting empathy.
His trip continues to Singapore, where he faces a frightening dilemma while carrying weed and having a near brush with death penalty. He makes a smart choice and disposes of the weed just in time.
This near miss brings home the consequences of his reckless actions. The potential threat of death forces him to reconsider his priorities and recognize the severity of his behavior.
He performs in Singapore, seemingly free of fear and fueled by the strong bond he shares with his fans. His performance in Istanbul, despite the threat of terrorism, becomes a powerful statement of defiance against fear. He bravely faces it.
It's a touching moment of shared bravery and solidarity.
The concert in Istanbul goes off without a hitch. Despite the dangers, the love and shared experience between him and his fans transcends any fear. The music becomes the escape, the healing element in the traumatic event.
The aftermath of the show leads to self-reflection, introspection, and a call from an old friend, Nathan, who reminds him of their shared youth and a sense of freedom. This nostalgia triggers a wave of powerful emotions, reminding him of his past and the innocence of youth.
The call with Nathan triggers a wave of poignant memories, reminding him of the shared experiences of reckless youth and the importance of friendship. It's a key moment in the timeline.
The call serves as a cathartic release, allowing him to reconnect with his past self and embrace the energy and optimism of his younger years.
His growing success leads to a shift in his perspective and behavior. He starts to appreciate his accomplishments while rejecting the negativity that once dominated his life. He begins to feel more confident.
His newfound maturity extends to his business dealings. He starts to be more decisive, focusing on a clear vision. He understands now when to say no.
He receives a life-altering call from his father, a moment of long-awaited validation and reconciliation.
This call is a pivotal moment. It brings closure to his past and offers him a long-awaited sense of acceptance and reconciliation with his father.
his journey continues, marked by a sense of gratitude, peace, and renewed purpose. He reflects on his experiences in Asia, highlighting both the beauty and the challenges. He starts to find a meaning in life.
He's found a balance between acceptance of his past and a renewed vision for the future. The challenges and the pain he endured have made him a stronger, wiser, and more compassionate individual. His journey is not a linear progression, but a complex interplay of growth, setbacks, and self-discovery. It's a story of transformation and acceptance of oneself.
So what will happen next? Will Eddie continue to embrace his newfound peace, or will new challenges arise? Will his relationship with his father continue to grow? What will the future hold? Will his success last?
What about his high expectations? Are they reasonable?
These are just a few of the questions we're left with as this chapter ends. Join us next time as we delve deeper into Eddie's journey. Don't forget to follow, share, and subscribe to I'm Not Supposed to Be Here, the podcast. And be sure to watch the award-winning docuseries on Tubi, listen to the audiobook, and enjoy the soundtrack of the motion picture, I'm Not Supposed to Be Here. And visit imnotsupposedtobehere.com and tokedekeda.com. Join us next time to discover whether Eddie's dream will finally become a reality.